time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You go to like those delis in New York or like Beverly Hills, and there's like pictures of like everybody on the wall. It's like Jack Nicholson, Kim Kardashian, Michael Jackson was here. Like what? Like celebs beyond celebs. And then there's the Jacksonville Beach Wobblers. Like we had Uncle Rico and Trevor Lawrence.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
He's confident enough to say these things because this was an absolutely 100% direct shot at the man in Chicago. There's no doubt about it.
And SI's Pat Forte.
That they will once again be looking at a 12-0 regular season and probably a 13-0 walkover against the Big Ten West, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
I went with a pod. We got the full house here. Pat's back. Ross is here, we hope, for the whole time. No comment, but we'll just leave it at that. See how it goes.
My bathroom is close. That's a good thing. It's right on the other
side
of this wall.
Ross is having some issues. He's having some issues. We do have, you know, it's off season, and we'd like to thank Commissioner Greg Sankey of the Southeastern Conference. Because, you know, sometimes you don't have a lot of news.
We need content. Thank you, Greg.
We need content. Yes.
He stepped up
many times. He may or may not listen. We won't out him if he does or doesn't. Who knows? He might just be polite and say he does. Or he may not. He may hate us. But whatever it is, he did take a crack at the outgoing Big Ten commissioner, Kevin Warren, who's leaving to become the president and CEO of the Chicago Bears, or he already has? Did he like just...
No, he starts in April. I believe he's going to arrive there in April. So he'll still be with the Big Ten for, it's like 60 to 90 days, I believe.
Okay, yeah. Yep. I mean, hell, Delaney would have pulled like $5 million bonus out of that 90 extra days. So we'll see what Kevin Warren can do. Kevin Warren is leaving, as we know. We talked last episode on about the impact and the fact that, you know, it was a very rare situation that Jim Delaney had the job 31 years. Two of the five people who have been the Big Ten commissioner died in office.
Yeah, right. There's only been five or whatever, five or six. What's the number?
Five, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's like British royalty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody walks away from that throne.
No, you get that throne, you take it and you keep it and that's it. And then Kevin Warren breezes in 3 years, changes everything, including feuding with Greg Sankey and creating the alliance against the SEC. So there's a little, you know, there's some history here. So, you know, we like a good commissioner fight. In fact, I'd be happy to set the Octagon match up if needed.
Absolutely.
Fine by us.
We'll invite them all 10. We'll rotate them around.
Sankey decided to lay out this quote. We need leaders today in college football and college sports, not leaders who make a stop to build a resume and go on to something else. Those who understand the problems ahead are real and demand our attention. Pat, what do you think? Scale of 1 to 10. How vicious? Not really that vicious, but
7. I mean, it's not vicious, but it's a direct shot, right? I mean, it's there's no mistaking what he's talking about there. And, you know, frankly, look, while Ross and I were at the NCAA convention last week, there was some chatter about another commissioner possibly at least looking around, checking options. And so, you know, Sankey is certainly of the, you know, career campus guy mindset, and I think is very much invested in the whole enterprise. He's mostly invested in making the SEC as rich and powerful as possible. And he's certainly been part of some things that have done, I think, some considerable damage to the overall stability and welfare of college sports. But I think he wants college sports to be as good as it can be and has done a lot of work and served on a lot of mind-numbing committees to try to make that happen. And so I think he looks at some of the commissioners who have come in from outside and maybe just view this as more of a, whether it's a resume building opportunity or a cash flow opportunity or whatever, and says, those aren't my kind of guys. And so I think there's definitely some actual sincerity behind that, other than just, yeah, Kevin Warren and I don't really like each other a whole bunch. So it was interesting that he said it out loud. And I do think Sankey has become more of a no F's given guy as he has gotten more and more prominence and security in his position. So, you know, I think he feels he certainly understands that he is the boss of the whole enterprise, really. He's the most powerful person. I don't know whether there is a boss, but he's the most powerful person in it. And so I think he has the authority to speak out. So I'm glad he did, because it gave us something to talk about.
Well, let's be honest. He's got the big head, you know? Like, he's feeling himself, all right? He's feeling himself. Like, you know, every decision he makes is praised, not just by, you know, the outside, but by his own, like, presidents and ADs who constantly go out of their way to laud him. And people who he's in committees with laud him about his expertise and his wisdom in the, you know, the moves with Texas and Oklahoma, even though they, as he said, knocked on their door, so to speak, you know, the new TV deal, the how he handled COVID compared to how some other people did. Look, at every turn over the last 2 to 3 years, especially, Greg Sankey has been praised for his decision making. And, you know, I think he feels like he is the best in the industry, probably because most would say he is. And he knows it. And he's confident enough to say these things, because this was an absolutely 100% direct shot at the man in Chicago. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, there's not been a ton probably written, because they haven't, you know, each side, the Big Ten and SEC, Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren, haven't talked publicly about it. But there's definitely, like, something brewing here. And, you know, it started with Slive and Delaney, I'm sure, where you have these two big powers. And we're getting to a point where, you know, it's probably going to start becoming more and more public that these two entities, though probably sometimes they should be working more with one another for the betterment of college sports, they are not. They are not working with one another. And they, on each side, feel like they have to keep up with the other in some way, and the other is a threat. So this should be interesting going forward, and this is the first, I feel like, big public shot at the between these two entities. That all that being said, I think Pat nailed that, like, Greg Sankey is a college sports lifer. He's been in it forever. He's been on every committee. He's been the chairman of every committee. He's knee deep in the legislation. He's knee deep into fixing the issue, into preserving college sports, preserving the NCAA. He's into all that, and Kevin Warren is not. He's not into the legislation. Kevin Warren was frustrated by how college sports worked, you know, wanted to kind of, in a way, I think he never really said this, but almost blow up things. I think that was part of the expansion and the potential for more expansion was to do that. So these are two very different men. But to circle back to the argument, what I started talking about first was, this is a really big first public shot at there is something between these two leagues, and it's getting louder and louder and louder. They are two, you know, different places that are working, unfortunately, again, working against one another. That's just how it is.
They're better working together, but there's obviously going to be competition on the field. So, yeah, it's certainly an interesting thing. It's like if the AFC and the NFC didn't really get along.
Yep.
So,
that's a good comparison.
Like, yeah. I think, I mean, which, you know, it's silly, right? It's just a name. I think that Kevin Warren, so look, ideally you don't have Big Ten commissioners for 3 years. Sankey is correct on this much. It should be a job that you take for like 10 years or eight years. Like, it should be a long thing because you can't just come in, make a bunch of moves, and then bail. Now, I don't think Kevin Warren did anything that's going to destroy college football or anything like that. But you got to have, like, you have to live with the consequences, if you will, or at least the results of your actions. And you can't just make, you know, this is a sport that a lot of people cherish, and to just come in and make some crazy decision and then leave it to the next guy. Like, if there's a parade of Big Ten commissioners, it's not good. And so I think Sankey's basically trying to lecture Big Ten presidents, like, don't do this again.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some personal animosity.
His way of getting involved in the, yeah, in the search is,
yeah,
hey,
he's basically, yeah, like, can we
let's
get,
not do yes. this again?
That's his yeah. search.
Please hire advice. Jim yeah. Phillips, and then the ACC will hire someone. Or,
yeah.
Right. Or, you know, put Gene Smith over there and mm-hmm. give Gene Smith the job, because he's been around and he's not, you know, and this is what they're at. Now, at the same time, you need some agitators. You need some new ideas. So it's tricky. And, you know, the Kevin Warren stuff, you know, Jim Delaney, you know, dragged his feet on everything, did very little for the athletes, you know, enriched himself enormously, fought the a tooth and nail every step of a playoff, did the illogical bidding of bowl games, and then immediately got paid off by the bowls. You know, it's like a politician that whatever industry, seemed to vote in favor of the telecommunications industry every time. And then all of a sudden, hey, look at that. Who became a consultant? To where you question what he was all about. Like, Kevin Warren doesn't have all that. And so the idea that Kevin Warren's like the bad guy and Jim Delaney's the ideal guy, not really going for that. But the point is, Kevin Warren did exactly what the Big Ten wanted, whether it was smart or not, whether it was canceling the season due to COVID or raiding LA or raiding the Pac-12. But it would be – so I don't blame him. But at the same time, I absolutely agree with Sankey. Like, just having a guy leave isn't it. I look at, like, Gary Bettman when he took over the NHL. He tried all of these moves that were really dumb, and some of them stuck. Like, I don't know, just dumb stuff. He got rid of, like, the names of the NHL used to have these great names of the divisions, the Norris division, right? And it had history, and he's like, people don't understand. Let's go East, Central, you know. It's like, oh, God. Tried a glowing puck on the TV. It just – but he stuck around for 30 years.
Yeah.
And reversed some mistakes and settled into this and learned and kind of, you know, they still boo him and all that, but whatever. It wasn't like, I'm going to try 10 crazy things and then get out of here.
Yeah. No. He was invested in the enterprise.
He's still there. Said. You know, like the mistakes you make or the bad TV deals you make or the, hey, we don't need ESPN. Okay, that worked. you got your brains beat in on that. Now you're back. So it's like, I think we'd be better off if, especially this league that with the SEC has so much power and influence, that we had somebody who's lifelong invested. I just hope they're not as stuck in the mud and of questionable decisions as Jim Delaney.
Right. I mean, that's the needle I guess you're trying to thread is if you want somebody who's invested in college sports, well, are they invested in all the bad ideas from the old days? Are they invested but willing to help modernize and continue kind of what's being done here?
Within college athletics, Jim Delaney's like the, you know, the god, right? Jim Delaney was the greatest. Yeah. Like, no, he wasn't.
Right. But no, Sankey's point is was sharply made and well taken. For sure. I would like to clip that from Ross there. He said he's got the big head. That was there's your sound bite from today's podcast.
I'm sure I won't hear about that later.
I won't have to explain that.
Not at all.
That was Ross Dellinger who said that, not me.
Whether Sankey actually listens or hears from other people or just doesn't, I don't know. But I do know this. One of Sankey's pet peeves, whether it's columnists or smart-ass podcasters or whatever.
Or both.
People like us saying, well, if you would just do X, then everything would be fixed to Y. And he's like, there are no easy answers. So the people that just say, if you would just only do this, that's what makes him mad. And I think we've occasionally offered some just do this sort of advice to the leadership.
That's my thing.
Sports.
That's literally my thing.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting
take
thing is
complex problems and provides easy solutions.
Yes. Yes.
Is, Greg Sankey, when you mention, and he's done this, he's done it publicly, he's certainly done it privately with me and others, and when you mention the NFL, well, why can't you do this in college sports like the NFL does? As soon as you mention like the NFL, yeah, his like alerts go yeah up and he just shuts it down. Like, this isn't the NFL. Stop trying to compare us and make us the NFL. And what's funny about that, right, is the guy he lobbed the shot at, a lot of people would have thought with it or thinking he wanted to expand more beyond USC and UCLA. And, you know, as somebody maybe in parts of the South, or several people in parts of the South have described it to me as, he appears to be making in Big Ten Midwest, NFL Midwest kind of conference, you know, appears to be gearing toward that. So it's funny because you got Sankey who's like, don't mention the NFL, it's not the same. And then Kevin Warren, you know, comes from the NFL, going back to the NFL, and wanted to expand enough to, hell, create his own NFL, and has said some things right about paying players. Kevin Warren has. He's said some things publicly about paying players and revenue share and all that stuff. And, you know, it's interesting, the two dynamics there. And they just, you know, again, there was a pull there. They didn't see eye to eye on a lot of different things. Not, and that's not to say like Greg Sankey, you know, doesn't agree in progressing and moving forward. I think he does. I think they're working on trying to get solutions to be able to give more to athletes. And, you know, the Transformation Committee, this is, you know, I'm off the rails now here, but the Transformation Committee was supposed to make pretty transformative changes. And Greg Sankey was a co-chair of that, and they didn't make transformative changes. And I think he's frustrated in that. Part of the reason they didn't probably make transformative changes, especially toward athlete benefits, is because, you know, they needed these recommendations to get passed. And in order to get passed, you have to have the little guys go in for the vote, and they're not voting for it if you make too big of changes that cuts them out. So that's a whole another topic for another pod. But there's been some frustration there.
Well, I mean, he literally said the quiet part out loud on, like, he went on Real Sports, HBO Real Sports, and said, paying players are things we have to resolve. We have to. So I want to be part of this conversation, and we'll be part of this conversation of what we can do better. He says, you know, look, we just signed this billions of dollars in TV deal. He mentioned the same, you know, let's have 20 members and pay our players. Let's look at the playoff money. Do we pay the players out of that? These are things that are bold statements, right, on a very touchy subject. And in whether you agree, you could be go all the way to the scale of the athletes should be employees of the university, right? And we should have this, that. You could go all that way, and you'd still, I think, have to, in fairness, recognize that if you're in management, this is a precarious negotiation, right? It was kind of the one weird thing that he said, because when you go into contract negotiations, like the NFL and the NFLPA come up with a contract negotiation, Roger Goodell doesn't sit there and say, you know, these guys really deserve more. And I'm sure they've been treated well in the past. And I really want to work. And no, it's like, what? Like, they've been getting too much, and this is easy over there for these guys. I mean, those things get vicious.
Yeah.
Vicious. And you get it. And then the NFLPA to, oh my God, we can't even we should be getting guaranteed money for life if we even do one practice. And, you know, right. It's a negotiation. It's a right. labor agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So neither side's telling the truth. They're just trying to get a little bit more on their deal. So right. Kevin Warren definitely breached that. And look, to me, with all of these things, I had someone ask me the other day, what's the one thing you would try to, if you were Charlie Baker or these guys, what's the one thing you would focus on? What problem? And obviously, I don't think most of the stuff is a problem at all. I think it'll all resolve itself and no one even knows what's going on. It's just a bunch of people complaining because change has hit a bunch of people who aren't used to change, namely college football coaches. But I will say, if my answer was, I would try to figure out, how am I going to handle if a court rules that these guys are all they're all employees of my university? For A, how do I prevent that? And then B, if it does come down, what do I do? Because to me, that is a real, that's your existential quote unquote threat, or at least disruptor to the system, far, far more than, you know, some kid was going to go to Florida and then he didn't because he thought he was going to get this crazy deal and he's just going to go play somewhere.
Yeah.
So
no, I, yeah, that's
the one.
In college sports, if you're an administrator and you're overreacting to your angry coach because the transfer portal is spinning out of control, you know, this is probably a bigger threat on the horizon. Exactly what you described.
Don't fight these little skirmishes that really aren't anything.
Right.
That's not going to change. It's not an existential threat that guys are moving. They just sit there and go, is this what we want? Well, that's what you got. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the kid's transferring and sometimes it works and sometimes it's whatever. That's not a real disruption. That's just, you got to work harder managing your roster. Deal with it. They become employees. The entire fabric of how an athletic department works can be altered, including how many teams you can even have.
Sure.
So yeah,
no, that's, I mean,
that's the big,
yeah,
one.
That's the mushroom cloud. No doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you,
and I'm not going with
a broad based athletic program. Yeah. With
I'm not even saying it's worse. I'm not even saying it's worse. I'm just saying that's the one that will be different.
Right. But if there were a court ruling that cleared the way for that versus Title IX and what is it, is it has established in terms of broad based athletics for two genders. Whew, somebody figure that one out and get back to me. Who's going to win that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's funny because a lot of coaches, they're so frustrated with, right, the player movement and how it's not regulated and how it's basically, as they say, right, a free agency without the regulation, without contracts and things like that. They want the regulation. They want the contracts. And so, and I'd give an example here, you know, RIP, but I was sitting in Mike Leach's office in October. And he just went off on a tangent like he often did that weaved in and out of politics like it often does, often did with him. But it was about, hey, it's time to pay the players and have contracts and we can fire them and all this stuff. I mean, I think a lot of coaches feel that way. They're like kind of bringing on. And the more and more you talk to ADs, specifically in Greg Sankey's league, they want some kind of regulation. And if it's employee status, okay. I don't think anybody feels super comfortable with that, but there are at least coaches that are starting to come around to, we need some kind of regulation. If it means some kind of employee status, okay.
Right. Or dealing with some kind of union and maybe they're not full-time, like whatever it is. Yeah. That's the only way to create it. Cause what they're asking right now are limits as if they are employees when they are not employees.
Right.
And so they're so uncomfortable with it. And so then really you've got to lay it out and go, well, is that trade-off worth it? But look, you may not. I mean, they find boogeymen to complain about, but it's the issue are nine justices in Washington, D.C. who swamped you last time.
9-0. Yeah.
9-0. I mean, I hear, it's this group. It's like, no, it's Brett Kavanaugh. Right. In agreement with all the others. Right. Mm-hmm. that's who's going to get you. And so you got to figure out how to handle that. So we'll see where that goes. Obviously a lot.
That was a bigger whooping than what TCU took from Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the one that to me will most upend it. This is just a different way to construct a roster. And the coaches who industries change. Every industry has disruptions and everyone has to deal with it. And the old guard sits around and goes, man, I wish it was the old days. But that ain't how the world works. And college football has been immune virtually to it until the last couple of years. And so you got a lot of people all up in their feelings about how that, oh my God, this is incredible. And it's like, it'll be all right. Like a lot of things change.
A lot of industries change. You know, it's a good point. It's something as I get older, I'm realizing, you know, that just different things in life change based on new generations coming into the world and old generations leaving the world. Could you imagine, you know, 100 years ago telling, you know, like Newt Rockne or something about the passing game and all the different rules involved with offensive passing and offense right now? My God, he would a brick, you know, like what are we doing? You know, what
Imagine so that, like Newt Rockne watches last weekend's NFL playoffs.
What is right? this?
It's like what's fourth and this? Six now? I mean, remember it was like 12 years ago or so, 10 to 12 years ago when Belichick went for it on fourth and two at Indianapolis in a regular season game.
Gasp. People
freaked. Yeah.
And they got Kevin Falk got stopped at the line. I mean, I was really close and they just really didn't run the play right. And it was like, people were apoplectic. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, why wouldn't you go for it? Now it's like, it's fourth and six. Hey, go for it. What the hell, right? Brandon Staley. I mean, fourth and 43.
Forget Newt Rockne. Lou Holtz barely could recognize this.
Right, right. So the world changes and you got to adapt. Everyone's industry changes. And so these guys adapt. But this would be a big change. Let me get to this. C.J. Stroud, Ohio State quarterback, kind of teased the Buckeye fans a little bit. I don't know if he did it on purpose or not. Got a few hopes up that he was going to return to Columbus for a final season. Enough that I was calling around and everyone was like, "This," like everyone had the same reaction. Like, you can't, right? Like, And sure enough, he went pro. The money is just enormous, obviously, particularly for a quarterback. On these deals. And so he, I think it was like up before you can make $40 million guaranteed as the number one pick. I think $32 million is the number five, which he may not drop past $22 to $27 million and a guaranteed signing bonus right off the bat. You get started to that second contract where these guys are making $40 million, $50 million, you know, who knows in 4 years as a good quarterback, kind of got to do it. However, there was the concept that, you know, could NIL make it so a kid like C.J. Stroud says, you know what, I'm already making good money. My family's not destitute. I get another year to develop. I get another year to actually go to college and get a degree that I might be interested in. I get another year of trying to finish the job at Ohio State, win a national title, be with my friends, all of those things. And in the past, we have seen quarterbacks do this. Peyton Manning was the number one pick. He returned to Tennessee in 98. Andrew Luck was the number one pick in 2010, I think. Turned to Stanford for another year. Matt Leinart returned to USC. Justin Herbert returned to Oregon. So those kind of quarterbacks, all of whom come from upper middle class to really wealthy families, at least in the case of the Mannings, had the option to make that decision. And NIL, it would seem to me, eventually one of these guys is going to say, I'm going to do it, even though C.J. Stroud grew up one of four kids, I think, of a single mom, right? Didn't have that, but now he does. Mm-mm. So it didn't work out this time, but in the future, one of these guys is going to do this, right?
Yeah, it feels like a matter of time thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that he was the guy because of like his upbringing. I think most people know his backstory now about living above the storage unit facility with his mom, who is the manager of the storage facility. His dad is in jail. You know, he's obviously got a lot in his personal life, but it does feel like a matter of time type of thing of when a big high profile player, a first round pick, maybe a top 10 pick, will get, you know, the $10 to $15 million NIL deal and loves college and wants his degree and hasn't won a championship yet or something and wants to stay to pursue that. That was the big thing with this situation. Pat can probably speak more on it, is that, you know, we had heard that was a big thing, was that he wanted to win a national championship, and that was really kind of maybe pulling him back. And, you know, I'm sure that Ohio State's NIL collective folks were doing what they could do, but man, it's just, you know, the money's just, it's not even close, you know, when you start getting into it.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And Dan, I thought your column was good in terms of pointing that out, you know, that like the sooner you start your clock in the NFL, the closer you get to the second contract when you become generationally wealthy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And while, yes, staying another year in college for $5 million sounds great, it's not as good as getting closer to a, you know, 6-year, $200 million deal or whatever the numbers would be. So he had to go. And yes, yeah, somebody will do it. Sure, somebody will do it, I think. Now,
it eases that. It's not zero to everything, right?
Yeah.
No, right. Right, exactly. It's not. It's not the old days.
Again, those four guys, Manning, Leinart, Herbert, they all had that opportunity and all sat there and said, yeah, I can wait a year.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. And you're not just playing for your letter jacket and whatever anymore. I mean, you can stay in college and make a very good living, depending what it is. The interesting thing to me that we're ways from figuring out is where's the sliding scale between a decreasing amount of money as a draft pick as you go down through the draft versus the amount that you can make in NIL? Where do those intersect? If you're a big shot college guy, like Stetson Bennett came back because he was going to make more money at Georgia probably than he would make as a sixth round pick in the NFL, and he liked being at Georgia. But, you know, for later round picks, for guys that are not top five or whatever, where will be that intersection point where it becomes as lucrative or nearly as lucrative to stay in college? So the problem is we don't really know what these collectives are doing, you know, in terms of actual numbers, because this stuff isn't very public unless people are making stuff up. The best thing that happened on Monday, this was great. Talk about teasing people. And boy, this is like toying with the emotions of your constituency. So this was like C.J. Stroud hadn't said anything. As Dan noted, you know, like the talk was out there. There was at least consideration that he may come back. And Brian Schottenstein, whose family has got their name like on buildings at the campus, you know, maybe the biggest of Ohio State athletic boosters. The basketball arena is named the Schottenstein Center. Tweeted Monday morning, got some big news today and got everybody all excited, and then came out later in the day with video of himself doing a gender reveal spike of a football. He's having a girl with his wife.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I bet the Ohio State faithful were like, oh, thanks for that, Brian.
Not the day, brother. Not the day.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that didn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, that's poking the bear a little bit at maybe the wrong time.
Yeah, that didn't seem like a good idea. That got everyone excited that something was coming. It's right. Well, so to that line of thinking, Michigan boosters or whatever the Valiant Collective, which is associated with Michigan, started the One More Year Fund. OneMoreYearFund.com. And the thing about the One More Year Fund is it's basically like a group funding or GoFundMe type thing to pay guys to stick around, right? Returning stars. The thing about this, and maybe they're out of schools. I just saw this one. So if you have one at your school or a different school, let me know. But this thing is unapologetic and could not be more direct about what it is. This is, you know, like those political ads, like America is Great Fund sponsor. Like, okay, like, what does that mean, right? Brought you this ad. Right? And you're like, okay, what the hell is that? This thing could not be clearer, okay? The One More Year Fund. Introducing the One More Year Fund, the crowdfunding campaign designed to retain key Michigan football players, starting with Blake Corum, Cornelius Johnson, Trevor Keegan, and Zach Zinter. That's the mission statement.
That's laying it out there, man.
First paragraph of their mission statement. And by donating, fans of choice have the chance to make a meaningful contribution to the Michigan football team in pursuit of the 2023 national championship by supporting NIL tubs. Okay. Guess what? Four players announced they were returning to Michigan next year. Mm-hmm. Blake Corum, Cornelius Johnson, Trevor Keegan, and Zach Zinter. Okay. Their motto.
And Jenkins
is
now too. Right.
And Jenkins, right. And they said, this is it. You donate here. We're going to try to get the money to the juniors, if you will, or whatever eligibility, and say, hey, Zach Zinter, you're not number one pick, right? Blake Corum, you got a hurt knee. will make it worth your while to return. And it is unapologetic. And you can donate $5. You can donate, they want 144 is their average or their goal because it's the 144th Michigan team. You could donate lots of money, right? Over 5,000 you can give. Their motto is those who stay will be paid. The old Bo Schembechler line.
I mean,
yeah.
Those who stay will be champions.
Yeah. This thing could not be more obvious. Like, I love it. It's just straight up.
No.
And you go, all right, that's pretty cool. And I know people sit around with NIL. And, our school doesn't have any money. Anybody can do this.
Yeah.
Kick in $10. Maybe we'll collect it all. And maybe we get one of our stars to stick around instead of saying, you know, I'm going to be a fourth round draft pick. I think it's fascinating. Well, and Michigan should be a lot better next year because of the one more year fund. I don't know how much money they're getting. I don't know, whatever. But when your stated goal is to keep four guys and all four decide to stay, it seems like it worked.
Yeah. And like, this is actually within the spirit of NIL rules too. You know, it's like, we want to pay these guys who have already proven their worth and have an established value to our program, as opposed to we're going to pay these recruits straight up front to sign with us instead of signing with Ohio State or Notre Dame or whatever. So
better return on investment. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You talk about ROI a lot, return on like all these boosters getting a return or companies getting a return on investment for NIL. And they probably aren't seeing a whole lot of return on investment and giving whatever, $500,000 to a 17, 18-year-old freshman, but they certainly are seeing a return on investment by giving, say, $1 million to a, you know, three-year running back who was a finalist for the Heisman. You know, that's a return on investment. That's where your team, you're going to see the results, and you're going to see that player probably bring in some kind of return either to the team or to your company. You know, plastering his face on everything because he's a known entity, he's a known player. So that makes a lot more sense. You know, this is where NIL, and we saw it in basketball, I feel like, a lot last year.
Yeah.
Right? Those guys stayed, right? We haven't really seen it, like, as loud in football before this year. It's like the second time around. We knew it would happen. Like, this is going to happen, and this is where you can really, you know, teams can really – take advantage of this NIL era is doing this, is keeping guys in college. And yeah, it's great in a lot of ways, right? It's great for the game. We talked about how it's great for the game of college basketball, having these players back, and certainly in college football too.
Let's just say that the ROI potentially is higher for them than the people who gave no money to Texas A&M recruits. There was no money paid to them. But if you did pay any money to those Texas A&M groups, you didn't get much out of it last year.
Nope. Mm-mm. You may in the future.
Yeah.
Future. No, this is part of why everyone's flipping out over this. Like, let's see what happens.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. I'm not going to necessarily suggest this. And I think the best thing is to do is both. But if a school, so let's say Michigan's, and this is not Michigan's strategy, but let's say Michigan's strategy is just, we are going to, if you come here and perform, you're going to be loaded. We're pouring it all into guys who come here and perform.
Yeah.
And that's their strategy. That's how they're going to use their resources. Maybe that works better than the other way, especially with the transfer portal, right? Someone's sitting there saying, hey, where should I go? Hell, if I have a good junior year, these guys are going to pay me a ton to come back from my senior year. I don't know. Right. We don't know how this is going to play out. They're all screaming like hyenas over stuff they don't even know how it works. Just because they're uncomfortable.
That's one of the things we talked about it before. It's like, give it time. Like, give it time to, like, give it 2 to 3 to 4 years to, like, kind of settle and level out to see, like, okay, what are we dealing with here? What are the real issues? I mean, you know, it was a month in, right? Or not even a month in. Like, before it even was implemented, before the July 1 date happened, like a year and a half ago, you had, like, you know, the officials and administrators calling for the chaos and stuff. Well, let's see what it is in, you know, give it time before you start adjusting rules. I remember Shane Lyons, former West Virginia athletic director, now he's a deputy at Alabama, and he would always tell me, you know, he was over the D1 council, and he did a lot of things with football oversight, a lot of NCAA legislation stuff. And they would implement a rule, and then a year later, oh, wait, this is happening, so we got to change this rule. And then, oh, wait, this is happening, we got to change this rule. Like, it, after like a year, and it, he always say to me, we got to give it 2 or 3 years. Don't change immediately. You know, give it time to see how the rule change really impacts kind of long term.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the
loudest hyenas tend to be the coaches themselves who, we feel like we're getting at a competitive disadvantage, change everything. And they go and start screaming to their athletic directors or the commissioners, you know?
Absolutely. No, it's ridiculous. And it's like, all right, well, let's see. This is college football is better because all these good players staying is good.
What a concept.
Good players staying and getting more education is literally the whole philosophical point of this operation, which I know doesn't matter much. And yeah, look, at Zach Zinter is a really good interior offensive lineman. He's not exactly those guys normally don't get great endorsement deals, although you just never know, right?
Although, yeah, I will say, when I was up there for Michigan, Illinois, and I checked into my hotel Saturday night after the game, this I thought was great NIL. The front desk of the hotel was selling copies of the Michigan offensive lines like children's book. Four of them with five of them with their names underneath. I thought, oh, that's a good idea. I like it. But that's another reason you go to the NFL. It's not going to, you know, you're a Zach Zinter. I don't know, maybe a third round pick, maybe a fifth round pick. I don't know. And so,
well, the biggest commercial deals in Michigan, just because I live in Michigan and I happen to know this story pretty well, is there the defensive lineman Mike Morse. There is a extremely prominent defense attorney in town named Mike Morse. And it's Morris, but it's pronounced the same way. So Mike Morris was at the football game, the lawyer at the first Michigan football game. He hears tackle by Mike Morris, the same name, basically. Spelled a little different, but they're basically the same pronunciation. He says, what is that? So the lawyer is not, the player is huge. The lawyer is not huge. They've done a bunch of joke commercials and all these different commercials. So you just never know, right? A guy just makes his money. But that's not what people are always in favor of that. But I just think this is a way to do it. And this is the thing. If you're Pitt's a big complainer, Clemson's a big complainer, you sit there and go, well, Michigan's doing that. Why can't you guys set up a GoFundMe? You can't set up a GoFundMe? Because
we have breaking news. Breaking news. Santa Ono, president of Michigan, says he just got off the phone with Coach Harbaugh, and Jim shared with me the great news that he's going to remain as the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines.
Hey, all right. He didn't get an NFL offer after all.
He was trying to – I think there was a Denver Bronco interview maybe set up this week. Harbaugh is back. Well, now that he's got all his players back, maybe he's not so upset at Ward Manuel and the way the collectives are working. All right.
There you go.
Jim Harbaugh is back.
Let's react to that.
I've got one last bit, but I was going to do something else, but let's react to that.
Sorry, put away the Daily Mail material.
Hold off. I have one fun story at the end, but it's not Daily Mail.
I love the president really wants to be out front on this. Santa Ono, who I've met, he's a very charismatic guy.
He's tweeting from his own
account.
It's bizarre.
Oh, yeah.
He's in on this.
I just got off the phone with Coach Harbaugh, and Jim shared with me the great news that he is going to remain as the head coach of Michigan.
Sources. Sources.
He named his source.
First. All right. So does this, are we doing this again next year? Or let's say they figure out how to make this all work and they get through this NCAA thing, which they will. How big is this to keep Harbaugh if he's actually committed to staying and not doing this again next year?
Huge. Like you said, for the next 365 days, it's huge. Look, he's established himself. He's proved he can take your program almost to the top. Back-to-back playoff appearances. Not many guys have done that. Thumping the hell out of Ohio State back-to-back years. Not many guys have done that. Got to figure out the next part. Year. Oh, heck yeah, I'll be favored next year. I don't think there's any doubt about it. The game's in Ann Arbor. On paper, They're going to have a good, very good team coming back. CJ Stroud, as noted earlier in the podcast, is not coming back. So, yeah, like they will once again be looking at a 12-0 regular season and probably a 13-0 walkover against the Big Ten West, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Got to go to Penn State, and they got to play Ohio State. We'll see what Michigan State can do. But, yeah, the non-conference stinks. And then going forward, this is a team that should be in the playoff, like, you know, 4 out of 5 years.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh, going forward, yeah, as the playoff expands, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It should make the playoff. Yeah, every year, you would think.
This is, I don't know what they paid him, but this is one of my things on why you got to pay him. I don't care if he's a pain in the neck. I don't care if any of it. Like, the value, just take the extra home game, what it means to Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
Like, playoff games are going to now matter. It's literally like the city of Ann Arbor should be like, we'll pet, we'll kick in. Like, we're going to get a home game.
Isn't that the truth?
Right? We're getting an extra home game, whatever those things are worth. But, you know, like, you guys have been to Michigan State. I don't know if Ross has, but, like, there's literally a public high school, Pioneer High School. It's kitty corner from Michigan Stadium, and they just load up their parking lot. I mean, they make, Lord knows how much money the public schools in Michigan, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, make off of just parking at Michigan home games. I mean, they load the RVs in. It's not owned by Michigan, the university. So it's like they're getting
like a parking Pioneer car. High School or something.
Yeah, Pioneer High School. They have this huge lot right across the kitty corner from the stadium. I mean, $50. I mean, it's just like, boom. Like, imagine how much money that is for those public schools. Well, you just add another one. It's like, boom, it's got a, you know, a ninth home game.
Right.
You know, that's a freaking 12% bump right there. You know, so that's huge for Michigan. They needed to figure out how to resolve this, and it looks like they were able to because it was a kind of an odd impasse.
Yeah. The one other element here, and I'll let Ross chime in, but there is a possibility that Jim Harbaugh is sitting out some portion of next season, but we'll see how long it takes
early games.
NCAA jurisprudence to be.
Can't see it. No, they got to resolve it. Take two games. Take your hit. Yeah. Smarten up next time, please.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of that, right? Have we ever seen coaches suspended for NCAA infractions? Basketball. But I know they changed the rule, right? Though. It's more head coach, whatever they're calling it.
Yes.
Strict
liability.
They're
always perp walking the basketball coaches. But, like, all right, Bill Self sat out some games at the beginning of the year. Anyone remember?
No.
Jim Calhoun once had it. I mean, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And what's their early season schedule look like? If any of
the first previous five, it's garbage.
I mean, that's what Central. Michigan had a preseason this past year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He was literally trying out his quarterbacks.
Yeah.
In the,
he treated it like a preseason. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, Hawaii, whatever. Let me see. East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green. Rutgers shows up in week four. I guess you could marginally need him. Then you're at Nebraska.
Right.
So.
And even then,
I don't think he can even get more than six. Like, I don't, and then at Minnesota. So even if he got the max somehow, which there, you could make a resolution, you know, whatever. Not a big deal. That's a huge deal for Michigan. Big for the Big Ten, too. Mm-hmm. But Jim Harbaugh is a pain in the neck, and he is costly and all of that. But you know what's even a bigger pain in the neck and being costly is losing.
That's right. Yeah. See. So. Brady Hoke / Rich Rodriguez eras.
They lost to Toledo. That one hurt. So, yeah, we'll see. I want to see what he does in this class of 2024. He needs to hit and try to get momentum going on the program. But, all right, that's big news. Good stuff.
Big news. There you go. Breaking on right here on the pod.
Right here on the pod.
We're
only here. You only get it here.
Yeah. That's right.
Nowhere else.
Subscribe,
you know,
rate,
I don't know
review,
what time the pod will friends. Post tonight, but you will not have heard this any other place.
That's right.
Normally, that stuff hits like all wrong, right? It's like right after we're done. It's like,
wrap up.
We got to put a top on it so we don't have to do that. So I do not want to go further without mentioning the tragedy down in Georgia. I should have led with this. I'm sorry I didn't. Football player Devin Willock and staff member Chandler Chandler LaCroix were both died in a single car crash Sunday, just after, I think, the Georgia parade in Athens. And just a sad, sad deal. And, you know, from the joy of that week and the accomplishment of that week to have them die in a car accident, just really sad. LaCroix's 24, Wellick's 20, played in a bunch of games this year. Not that that really matters at this point, but just thought we should mention that, and our thoughts are with everyone at Georgia who lost someone they love and their families and all of that. So,
yeah, for sure.
Tough go of it.
Yeah, and just, yeah, the incredible, you know, jarring of emotions you go from that. Yeah, they had their on-campus celebration of the championship Saturday during the day, and then that happens early Sunday morning. Really hits home the fragility of life for everybody, and we see these headlines way too much with college kids, and you know we don't know all the circumstances involved there. But shoot, the place where the fatal accident occurred was right by where my son, who went to Georgia, used to live. Icon Apartments there, and you know you can just it's alarmingly easy to see your kid in that same circumstance, if not for a little bit of luck or maybe a little bit better judgment or whatever went into it, and you just hope that kids can navigate those college years that can be so great, but sometimes just have these horrible tragedies.
Yeah, that's sad. All right, there's no good way to transition. Well, there probably is, but I don't know how to do it. But one of our all-time favorite college football players is Trevor Lawrence. Gave us great joy with his hair, his marriage, his wedding registry.
We did like his wedding registry. That was good
stuff. Yes, his toasters, his fancy toasters. Trevor is all joy. He had a big game, a big victory on Saturday night. Had a horrible first half and a great second half. Came back from 27-0 to lead the Jaguars in a victory over the Los Angeles Chargers. And then he went to celebrate, very Gus Malzahn-like, at the Waffle House. I don't know if you saw this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Trevor. He's
as
young.
If he needed anything else to resonate with the Jacksonville fan base, that seals the deal.
I love it. The guy's, you know, rich, and the wife and the hair and the whole thing, right? It's like, what do we, the biggest victory, Jacksonville. Let's go to Waffle House. I love it. Absolutely. Where better to hang out with your friends? But here is my question, because I do know the answer to this. I do know the answer because of some tremendous reporting by Casey Feint. I'm going to say her name, and maybe I'm wrong. First Coast News did some great reporting on this, so I know the answer. What did Trevor Lawrence order to celebrate the big win over the Chargers at Waffle House?
Got to be the five-star special. Five-star special.
He was a five-star.
I mean, sure was.
Gotta be.
But that. What time of day was this? Was this nighttime?
Middle of the night.
Okay.
When do you go to Waffle House? You can only go after midnight and before 6 a.m.
The game was late, right? So it was after the game. So the five-star special, what does that entail? What is exactly? I'm trying to find.
That's a lot of everything. I've got it here. Hang on.
I think it's the All-Star special.
All-Star, not five-star. Yeah, All-Star
okay.
special.
He was a five-star. Okay. So you get eggs, toast, hash browns, which, of course, you can then add, you know, right, all
pancake,
the different things
waffle,
you can add.
Or waffle.
You get the waffle,
bacon, and then looks like two types of sausage. I don't know.
You can get grits also. It's possible. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Maybe
instead
those are
hash
grits.
Browns. Yeah.
Yeah. The All-Star special.
That's it. Yeah.
That was not the order.
Oh.
I'm going to say I think he went hash brown bowl scattered smothered covered.
Also not the order.
Damn. Well,
round two.
Don't tell me he got like the pork chop or something.
The ribeye steak.
Yeah.
No, please no.
According to this, he ordered the cheesesteak plate with a side of pecan waffles.
Oh,
really?
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So a little breakfast
I can't hate
dinner.
On that. That sounds pretty damn good.
Yeah. So, I mean,
That's like
pecan waffles.
Yeah, that's
for
like
a guy from Georgia. Yeah, that's
as close as Waffle House gets to surf and turf, I think. the cheesesteak plate with a side of
what would a Waffle House surf and turf look like? Oh, it would be like what would it? It couldn't be. It can't be steak and lobster. It's got to be something like ground catfish. Chuck patty in catfish, fried catfish. Here's your ground chuck patty, hamburger steak, and fried catfish. That's right.
Yeah, spam and catfish.
Yes, there you go.
His normal go-to is the Texas bacon cheesesteak melt.
Mm. Oh, that is good. Okay. I've had that. That's good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm a straight breakfast. I don't care what time of day I go to Waffle House. It is going to be breakfast. Yeah.
I'm not going there for a no cheesesteak. No. It is interesting. You could get the city ham biscuits or the country ham biscuits at Waffle House. They do distinguish.
Well, they stayed for about an hour. They took pictures with guests. Marissa came, the whole thing. And it's the Jacksonville Beach Waffle House. Ironically, not the only celebrity who's ever been there. The guy who played Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite was there back in 2019.
Right. Perfect.
Now, I mean, you know,
come and throw a football over the restaurant.
You ever go to like those?
Now, Uncle Rico would definitely get the Waffle House surf and turf, whatever it may be. I'm thinking that he would order that.
You ever see me throw a football over a mountain? That's my favorite line.
That's the greatest.
You go to like those delis in New York or like Beverly Hills, and there's like pictures of like everybody on the wall. It's like Jack Nicholson, Kim Kardashian, Michael Jackson was here. Like what? Like celebs beyond celebs. And then there's the Jacksonville Beach Waffle House. Like we had Uncle Rico and Trevor Lawrence.
You take what you can get in Jacksonville.
The guy who played Uncle Rico. I'd be more excited to be sitting next to him than almost anybody. That's like Kim Kardashian was here. No. We got Uncle Rico. Anyway, that's it. So if you want to know, Trevor normally gets the Texas bacon cheesesteak melt. On this occasion, he went cheesesteak plate, side of pecan waffles. Eat like a champion, Trevor. Eat like a champion. Right. Yep. We'll never quit you.
Fuel up and get ready for that trip to Kansas City now.
Yeah, maybe slinking back. May not end as well. Patrick Mahomes unlikely to blow a 27-0 lead. So don't throw four picks in the first half. That's probably not going to end so well with Andy Reid and Trevor and Patrick Mahomes. But we will see. We will see. All right, that is our show. That's our show. We made it through. Continue to subscribe. We'll probably have more Harbaugh fallout later in the week, see where we're at and everything else. And leave us nice reviews, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. Mostly keep listening. We will talk to you later.